Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Well, I'm happy to see you all. It's a very inspiring for me when we can all come together this way. We don't see each other very often, but I know we are all of a single mind when it comes to this practice. So it's quite joyful when we can spend some time together like we can do tonight. So I thought I would talk tonight about a tendency of us human beings that creates problems. The basis of Buddhism is that life is suffering, and suffering is created by our delusions. So I'd like to talk about one aspect of our delusions tonight. And that is about the tendency to be, for us humans, to be so insisting when we think we're right. In our everyday life, when we meet with each other and when we have a discussion and when we talk about something, our words are limited. And that's because our understanding of the things of our life is based on our own particular experience, our own personal experience. Our understanding is based on feelings and the memories that are the result of our experience. And these feelings are very personal. And it means that we interpret our feelings and we interpret our memories in a one-sided way, because our feelings and our experiences, they do not include the experiences of others. That's the nature of the sense of separation that we have. That's an intrinsic part of everyday life. So when we speak, or when we discuss something with each other, when we speak of something, we cannot be perfect. No matter how intelligent we are, no matter how much experience we have, we are always adding something that was not in our experience, or we are always leaving something out. You know, we edit our experience and we leave out something that's maybe a little painful, and we can't help it. And that's because our human capacities are not perfect. Our human capacities are not perfect. Yet, how often do we insist that we are in the right? When I think of how many people there are alive on the on the earth today. I think it's estimated to be about 8 billion or something like that. And then I think about how many people have been alive on the earth throughout history. I don't know what that answer is, but maybe it's like 100 billion. A lot. That's a lot. And so if we take that, if we assume that's true, 100 billion people have lived on Earth since the recording of human history. What percentage of those people believe that they are unique and that they are right? It's interesting when you think about it. And that's why we have problems in the world. Far too many of us human beings insist that we have the truth. We are right. And this insistence about our own correctness makes great problems for us, leads to stubbornness, alienation from each other, a sense of separation. Even war. And in a general way, it simply doesn't feel good when we walk around feeling we are right and we know more than the person we are with. They don't have it right and we have it right. When we walk around with that kind of attitude, it just doesn't feel good. So insisting that we are correct or in the right makes problems. But although we create these problems, we continue to insist. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that some people are always insisting they're right, they are correct? And if you've known somebody like that for a long time, you wonder why do they keep doing that? We keep insisting. And this insisting nature of our mind makes problems. And when we have a tendency to insist, we call it small mind. But when we practice, when we come to practice, we have an opportunity to see this tendency of our mind. We have a chance to see our mind's insisting nature. And when we begin to sense that and see that and accept it, then it is big mind. I've never come across the word insisting in any Buddhist scripture, but it's there. Because I think practice really means to insist on nothing. Suzuki Roshi said it's important to believe in nothing. And we can say practice is about insisting on nothing. Even though our ideas and our feelings and experiences are very strong. So when we practice, our mind can become very wide and very flexible. That leaves room for many ideas and many experiences. And then we can include everyone in our experience and not just ourselves. So, if we want to carry our practice into our everyday lives, we have to practice not clinging to our own personal ideas. Or, in other words, we should try not to fall in love with our personal experience and our memories. When we cling to our own ideas, it means we are infatuated with ourselves. And then it becomes very hard to include others in our experiences. And it is also very difficult to feel included in the lives of others. That's why I think so many people feel like outsiders and suffer from that. So our practice is not to insist when we are talking about something. When we talk to each other in conversation, or maybe when we are making a personal presentation like now, we have to be careful not to insist. And we should listen to each other without insisting. So as we know, the emphasis of Zen practice is to be aware of our own mind at all times and to watch our own tendencies. Then we can have small mind included within the big mind. And then there is little danger of fooling ourselves. Over the years at Kanando and in the centers that we had before Kanando, we have seen and we have welcomed many people into practice. And we've come to understand that people come to practice because they want their life to be better. They want their life to be better in some way. They feel that there is some problem, and practice will help their life be better. So they come to practice with great enthusiasm. But after a time, many people, perhaps most people, don't stay with the practice. They lose their enthusiasm. It starts to diminish in strength, and they become discouraged. And that's because they come to feel that their life is not getting better, and that this practice is too hard. And that comes about because many people who come to practice cling to some idea. They cling to the ideas about the meaning of better and the meaning of hard. And this clinging leads to discouragement. So that's why people lose interest in practice. If there was some way we could gently let people know that insisting on life becoming better, or insisting that life not be what they feel is hard, they could have a better time of it. People will lose interest in practice when they have a one-sided view of ideas of better or hard, which leads to a misunderstanding of practice, where we are told, don't analyze and don't judge, just practice, without qualifying your experience as good or bad or better or hard. Just move ahead. So we know, we've been told, and we know from our own experience that our practice, our spiritual practice, is not about achieving something or gaining something, such as a better life. Our practice is about letting our true nature express itself, our true nature that does not insist on anything, allowing our true nature to express itself through us and through our activities of our daily life. So practice, we say, we like to talk about and appreciate the truth that our practice is simply for itself without one-sided ideas. And when we can do that, when difficult times come up, there will be no discouragement. There will be just ourselves practicing without insisting that there is no discouragement. When we do not insist that we have no discouragement, that's how we learn to encourage ourselves. So, what we've learned in our years together at Canon Do as a community, we've learned that how we share ideas and our experiences with others is vital. It is a significant element of our practice. And from our experience with each other, we learn how to include each other in our practice and how to express our oneness with each other. And we also learn that we cannot do that by insisting on our own way. We cannot include others in our practice if we insist that they do it according to some formula that we may be holding in our mind. So expressing ourselves with each other cannot be done in one direction. If we do that, we will create difficulties. So when we cling to a mind that insists that we know what's right for ourselves and we know what's right for other people, it means we are in love with ourselves. And there is so much of that going on in the world today. People who should be getting along with each other and supporting each other and helping each other are at war with each other all around the globe because some insist that their way is right and they condemn the others for what they believe is the right way. In our delusion, we human beings fall in love with our own cherished ideas about politics, about religion, about ways of life. We embrace an idea and we elevate it. We put it on an altar and we worship it. We are in love with our own ideas of what is right and what is wrong, of what is good or what is bad. And when our mind is like that, holding very fixed views about such things, the mind is unthinking and it cannot be creative. Because with very strict ideas of right or wrong, good or bad, and our insisting nature, there's little room in our mind for something new to appear. And there is little room in our mind for others. So this insisting tendency that we cling to, when we cling to it, we cannot find equanimity in our life. And we will be discouraged by feelings of difficulty. And we will endlessly be insisting on finding something better than what we have. So to give up the habit of insisting is the basis of our spiritual practice. And we give up this habit of insisting without holding any ideas about practice. We just build up our trust in our inherent purity and in our inherent innocence. And we build up our trust in what we are doing in our practice. When we can do that, we can express ourselves fully, both to ourselves, to each other, and to the entire world that we live in. So even though our words are not perfect, and even though our human life has its limitations, when we let go of our insisting nature, we can find the truth of things. Thank you. Does anybody have a comment or a question? Hello, Phil.
Hi, Les. Thank you so much for your talk. It was very apropos to me, because the last 3 or 4 weeks in the Kanando morning Zazen, I found myself drifting into kind of something I didn't recognize in the framework you put it, but this insisting mind, when this topic of the Gaza conflict arose. And without expecting it, I found myself getting angry and expressing kind of hard things, exactly as you describe. And the first time this happened, I apologized to people afterwards in the chat. And lo and behold, a couple weeks later, it came up again. And I just wanted to say that I really appreciate your calling this, holding this to our attention, because it's been very alive for me, and without feeling like I've gotten beyond whatever that is, that self-love, love of a certain righteous feeling or whatever. And it's just been so it's kind of central to my practice the last few weeks, to at least try to be more aware of it. It can get old if you apologize to people over and over for the same thing. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Phil.
Les, I got a question.
Oh, yes.
If you're in a situation and you're insisting that you want your situation to be better, how do you know when to leave or stay? Right? Because if you're insisting this situation has to be better, but at some point the circumstance is just such that, you know, letting go is not enough. When do you know, when do you have to change your environment, your circumstance? And how do you know when to do that?
We start doing that by, first of all, paying attention. Paying attention to the people we are trying to convince, paying attention to the people that we want to influence, paying attention to what they believe in, paying attention to what they insist that is correct. Before we present our own feeling of what is the best thing for us to do, before we insist, we first open up to the other people and allow them or facilitate them to express themselves. And when we have a pretty good handle on what they believe in, what they are insisting in, even though in our own mind we may think, oh boy, that's dangerous. Only when we have a good grasp of what the other person is insisting on can we engage in a conversation about finding some middle way. So it starts with the basis of our practice, which is pay attention, awareness. In other words, you know, we bring our zazen into our relations with others. And we're very patient, and we practice being good listeners without filtering. So it starts with zazen. For many years, I felt that Zen practice or zazen is a practice of sanity. Sanity. Because without that mindfulness, we live in an insane world. But if we can come together in mutual awareness and the capacity to listen to each other, we can approach sanity. Thank you. Is that Anna?
Can you hear me, Les?
I think so.
I'll come closer. You spoke about community quite a bit, and I wondered, do you think there's a difference in the commitments we have to Sangha, to our spiritual community, compared to the other communities we're in?
Inherently, there is no difference. We should communicate with each other in our Sangha and with people who are not necessarily in our spiritual sangha, we should communicate in the same even-handed and patient way. No difference. You know, there's a danger if we don't. If we think, oh, my sangha is special, it's sort of above everybody else in my life. If we do that, that's another form of insistence. So wherever we go and whoever we're with, we treat each other with the same mindfulness and respect and patience and tolerance that we do with the people in our precious sangha, whether it be strangers or somebody on the line at the grocery store or somebody in a workplace who's a troublemaker. We treat everybody with the same patience and the same attention and the same graciousness.
Thank you, Les.
Dave had a question.
Hi, Dave.
Thank you so much for your talk. Made a very clear presentation of how we can be blinded by our own beliefs and ideas. And you mentioned that Suzuki Roshi said famously that it's very important to believe in nothing. There's another relevant passage from one of Suzuki Roshi's talks that I've always loved, where he talks about this Japanese concept called tambanku, which he explains is the images of somebody walking around with a great big board on their shoulder, and they can only see to one side because their view is blocked on the other side by this big board that they're carrying.
You mean like this?
Yes, yes. And one of the things I've always loved about that image is that, you know, we often think of our beliefs as being this wonderful, productive thing that we carry with us that helps us navigate through life. But this tambanku image of you're carrying around this big, heavy board that not only obscures your vision, it bangs into things and is all, it's a wonderful image of how our clinging to beliefs can be such an obstacle to really getting on with life. Anyway, I just wanted to make that comment.
No, that's a good point. Thanks for pointing it out. That's a wonderful image. In another place, he said something about to be fooled by someone or something is not so bad, but when we fool ourselves, it is fatal.
Your talk is waking me up. When I talk to my wife, I always have my mind over said, I'm right, she's wrong. Or even as I get her coming up, you're smart, but I'm right. So how to practice to be less clinging on what? How do I feel my ideas or belief I am right?
I think I understood your question. Some of it was not clear, but I'll try to give an answer based on what I understand your question was. You know, we may see some human behavior that we think that we know is very destructive, very harmful, and creates a lot of suffering. And so naturally we say, you shouldn't do that. We think they shouldn't do that. And we like to insist. But if the problem is if we express our insistence when we are hopeful of changing the behavior, we won't change the behavior. So when we express ourselves, we should be careful not to come across as too insistent, even though we are totally convinced that we know what is the right and the wrong thing to do. It is our relationships with the others that's the most important thing. Not convincing them that they are wrong and we are right. The point of our practice is to help each other trust each other, even though we have many differences. So, in our practice, when we practice for a time, we start to develop that kind of attitude. I just want to be with these other people, and I hope they can trust me. And I will try to trust them. That, I think, is a very enlightened attitude, and it brings great joy.
Hello, Les. Do you hear
me? Yeah. Is it May?
Yes.
Oh.
Nice to see you. Thank you for your talk. I think this idea of insistent, I just thought something before insistent sounds like there is a judgment. So my practice recently is about the journey from discernment to judgment. There's a spectrum from discernment to judgment. So do you have a comment between this journey, you know, from discernment to judgment? You know, so where are we?
Well, because we are human, I think it's very natural. I think it's inevitable that we will ultimately make a judgment about things. And I think what our practice can allow us to do is when we've first discerned something for the first time, something new, before we let our mind race quickly to judge it as good or bad, go slow, live with it, taste it, observe it. Discover what it really is, this discernment, this sense of what some thing or some event or some person inherently is. So if we keep our mind in a state of discernment before letting it rush to judgment, I think we can learn a great deal about the world we live in and about ourselves. Go slow, go slow.
Thank you.
You know, I think that's one of the reasons why this notion or this term in Chinese and Japanese Buddhism, you know, you can read stories where a student asks the teacher a question and the answer is, I don't know. I don't know, which is one way of saying, I really haven't given it much thought yet. I don't want to be too quick to judge it. I don't know. I'm not going to say anything. Just don't know is a good attitude. Thank you.
Nice to see you again, Les. Been a while. So on this same sphere of what May brought up, what has been kicking around since we started this for me was recent events, and then the wall sitting, and how I can meet things that are sometimes excruciating, especially physically painful. And but like everything, it moves, time continues, and everything changes. But you know, you live long enough and there are sort of emotions that come up that are repeat from time immemorial since I've been alive. And one of those that happens in this realm of judgment being right, and then discernment, which now I have to go to the dictionary to be really clear on that, is, and it is a, it has been a theme of mine for a while, is violence. Violence especially starts in words these days, rarely, I think, outright physical. And this kind of triggers very ancient instincts in me. For example, fight or flight. So this ability to say even I don't know doesn't appear. I recoil. I condense, and I am afraid, I think. Fear is what takes place. So in the sitting is this great opportunity, I think, meeting it. Sometimes very, and in the sacred quietness and stillness, my mind is calm enough to sort of examine it a little, to as you say, become friends with, to become familiar, to know. So interacting with people, some people, is very, can be very, can be violent. And I'm trying to work with this through other people who I talk to, and they, one of the great people I've talked to, say you, the first thing that happens for him, he was a martial artist, is to develop compassion, almost to try instantaneously to be compassionate towards somebody who is exhibiting violence to me. That this is, this, anyway, I can go on and on. I want you to say something now.
Say something about violence?
Communication and this, you know, I have to, some, I feel like I have to make a judgment call to leave, basically, to nurture myself, to take care of myself, to not ignite more by saying I'm right. And you have this, this back and forth escalating to an explosion. Wars, lawyers, violence. And I recognize this in myself, and I do not want to promote this for myself first. I don't want to live like this at this moment with this breath. What can I do? I can leave carefully. Skillful means, as you say, skillfully. And sometimes one of the most important things is to bring in a third person. So I don't know. This is just was been kicking around. So
okay.
And I was sitting next to May. It wasn't my idea. No, it's her fault. She brought it.
Was May being violent with you?
Do you want to leave?
Well, I mean, I can just, you know, I have a tendency to talk too much, so it's probably better that I don't say too much.
Well, we have, you know, we have the capacity to be creative when faced with a difficult situation. And if we're with somebody and they're violent, one choice we can make is to leave. Just when we feel we're becoming overwhelmed by the experience, just get out of the way and take a break. And you also suggested that bringing another person into the conversation can help. And there are other things we can do when we meet with somebody who's acting angrily or violent. If our judgment tells us it's possible, we can say to that person, "That's very interesting. Can you tell me more?" And that is an act of acknowledgement of another person. "Please tell me more about what you believe." And quite often, it is the acknowledgement or the lack of acknowledgement that is causing somebody to have violent tendencies. Sometimes we can do that simply by encouraging the other person to continue talking and acting in the way that they have been. Sometimes that's not the best thing to do, but if we can get there and engage the other person in that way, and they can explain more about how they came to feel the way they do, and they appreciate our understanding of them, that's very healing if we can get there. But like you said, the whole spectrum of actions or non-actions we can take when confronted with violence. And in the world at large, when there's violence, we can, on the one hand, create a war, or on the other hand, we can create a peace process. And people will have different opinions about what to do. And in our own lives, we pay attention to that. Skillful means and be creative in each situation. The new issue of Time magazine came, and it features 100 of the most influential people in the world today. And they're all tremendously creative people in the arts and in politics and in many things. But we don't have to be an artist or an actor or a writer to feel the power of creativity. We can feel our creativity in our own ordinary relationships with things and with each other. This is the beauty of our practice. Our creativity can manifest itself in everything we do. We don't have to make it into Time magazine. Thank you.
Tell me more.
I'll lend you my copy of the magazine when I'm finished.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to kanando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.